It's Tuesday of the fifth week of Lent. It's Passiontide. Welcome to today's Lentcast. This is Father John Zulsdorf. There's no collect church today because way back there were no processions during Passiontide, though some would be established later. The Roman station, however, is Santa Maria in Via Lata. The origins of Santa Maria in Via Lata date to the 5th century. It was rebuilt in the 11th and 15th to take the form we see today. According to strong tradition, St. Paul may have spent 2 years of his imprisonment here under house arrest. Another tradition claims that Paul was across town at San Paolo alla Regola. But here you find an underground oratory with paintings depicting the imprisonment of Paul. Above the altar, designed by Bernini, with the tomb of the 3rd century deacon and martyr Agapitus, is the 13th century miraculous image of the Vergine Avvocata, Mary, our advocate. In the older traditional form of the Roman Rite today, we hear in the first reading the story of Daniel, who remained safe surrounded by lions. Surrounded by mortal danger, Daniel, a prefiguring of Christ, remained safe from his enemies. Daniel in the lion's den was a popular way to depict Christ crucified in the early church. We turn again to Pius Parsh and the Church's Year of Grace. He's explaining Passiontide. This is a continuation of yesterday's comments. Passiontide is a time in which we are to meditate more intensely on Christ's suffering. It is the time of which Christ says, "When the bridegroom shall be taken away from them, then they will fast." What, more specifically, constitutes this commemoration of Christ's sacred passion? Here I must again remind my readers of the profound difference between the ancient Christian approach and the modern. How does popular piety present Christ's suffering? It proceeds to review Holy Week historically. It pictures with great fidelity the various scenes of the bitter passion. It dissects all the feelings and thoughts of our suffering Savior. It evokes bitter tears of compassion. It analyzes the virtues displayed by the Lord at every phase of his suffering. How shall I imitate him? What can I learn from him? Are its most important questions. Finally, it makes suffering the great motive for moral amendment. He died on the cross for me, and I have offended him so deeply. Now, what was the approach of the ancient Christian piety as found in the liturgy? It followed an entirely different course. To be sure, it too put Christ's historical sufferings in the place of advantage, but it did not stop there. More important was the purpose and the goal of Christ's passion. The historical context took second place. By his suffering, Christ redeemed us and made us children of God. These are the happy truths of Christianity. Therefore, the liturgy did not seek to elicit bitter tears. It could even rejoice. On what apparently is the most tragic day of the whole year, on Good Friday, during the veneration of the cross, we are able to lift our voices in jubilant song. See, because of this wood, joy has come into the whole world. Christians of an earlier age, therefore, were not prone to speak of the bitter passion, but of the beata passio, the happy or blessed passion. The liturgy does not focus attention upon the human side of the passion as much as upon its goal, our salvation. Ancient Christian art was not satisfied with depicting the sufferings of Christ, but rather perceived in them the reality of redemption. Whereas, since the Middle Ages, Jesus has commonly been pictured at the scourging pillar in his agony or on the cross writhing in deathly pain, the ancient church exalted the cross as a sign of victory and redemption, the crux gemata, the cross set with jewels and made with precious metal, without the figure of the crucified. These two types of crosses may well be regarded as symbols of the two approaches to Christ's sacred passion, the two major types of Christian piety.